Back together again, you and I, Thursday, May 4th, 2023, right here on Connecticut Today. We wondered if area listeners ever participated in a product or company boycott because of political or other reasons, much the way there's an ongoing boycott of some Anheuser-Busch products. Yankee Institute for Public Policy Director of External Affairs Bryce Chenault stopped by to talk about some key bills being considered in the General Assembly. We got details also about upcoming Barnum Festival events from Nancy McKiernan. And finally, our buddy blogger Lenny Grimaldi from OnlyInBridgeport.com stopped by for his weekly update. Man, that's a lot of money. That is a wow. That is a lot of money. Did you just hear that on our top of the hour news there? And Anheuser-Busch is still scrambling and all this off of the Dylan Mulvaney connection with the beer and with Bud Light. And, you know, Mulvaney being this transgender influencer. Man, Anheuser-Busch lost $5 billion. Of its market or corporate value here because of this screw-up? How do you screw up Budweiser? I mean, I'm asking that rhetorically now because we found out. And now Budweiser did their earnings call today, and they're trying to patch all this up. I mean, man, and I've said this before, and hi, it's Connecticut Today, by the way. Paul Baselli here. Hope you're well. On this, so what is this, Thursday already? This is fascinating. And I am generally not a guy who is into boycotts. I'm not into that. Maybe you are. And if you are, I'd love to hear that at 203-333-9422. 333-WICC. Because to me, the boycotts, I don't care what it is, whether you're boycotting a food or a beverage or some sort of service or some franchise, whatever, and you're free to do that. But to me, when you start boycotting people, you tend to boycott. The boycott hurts the boycott, not cart, Paul. The boycott, you know, tends to hurt the little guy or the little gal. Like if your local bar, your local tavern, your local joint, your local bar and grill, your local watering hole uses less Budweiser, well, yeah, I guess if you do that enough, that trickles up to the top of the company. But the immediate effect is on the local wholesaler. Remember how there's distributors and wholesalers and all this for just about everything, including liquor here. Liquor and beer and spirits and wine and all that, they're very powerful lobbies here. But if a bunch of guys decide, hey, I don't like what they're doing with this Dylan Mulvaney thing, so I'm not going to have my Budweiser, I'll switch to Miller or some other imported beer or Sam Adams or local IPA or whatever. You think that people really at the top of Anheuser-Busch care? I know they care, but they can recoup that in other ways. But if you do this whole boycott thing at the bottom of the totem pole here, it really hurts the little guy here. But I'm fascinated with this. Have you ever boycotted anything? 203-333-9422. 333-WICC. Once again, 203-333-9422. 333-WICC. Have you ever boycotted anything? Have you ever made a political statement by what you buy, what you don't buy, what you choose to, or who, or whichever franchise you may choose to patronize or not? I mean, this whole thing with this social media influencer who I never heard of this guy, girl, they, them. I don't get this pronoun thing. That's just me. You're supposed to say they or them or something like that or whatever they choose, whatever pronoun they choose. I still don't get that. Anyway, having said that, man, $5 billion. That's a lot of beer. A lot of beer that's not being imbibed. See, because, and I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago when this whole thing bubbled up, and I'm reading this and going, really? This is where we are now? But I'm reading all this and wondering how the people at Anheuser-Busch could be so dumb. And I know they say this got out of hand and it was just supposed to be a one-off thing, but there are no such things as one-off things in society anymore, especially when it comes to situations like this. And the people and these two marketing folks who apparently authorized this thing and they're now on leave, quote unquote, whatever kind of leave that is, paid or otherwise. Look, they it's one of two things underway, in effect here. Either they knew the ruckus that this would stir up and they said, hey, we're going to fall back on that old public relations theory. And there's a couple of theories here in public relations and in advertising. And I thought about this when I heard about the Anheuser-Busch call that was made today and the $5 billion. There's two schools of thought, and you probably heard about this. One school says there's no such thing as bad PR. In other words, as long as my name is being mentioned or my company or my organization, my company, whatever, that's good. It's free advertising. And akin to that, the scenario of, well, yeah, even if you're writing something bad about me, just spell my name right. That's the other one you hear. Yeah, whatever. Say what you want about me, but just spell my name right in the press release or whatever. So this whole Budweiser thing is fascinating to me. And I wonder, like I say, it's got to be one of two things. Either this was the tactic all along that they thought was going to be good for them, or they just simply, these marketing geeks or whatever from Anheuser-Busch, from Budweiser, didn't realize how interwoven some things are in society. I mean, I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago. You can, you know, if you go out on the street, if I took a microphone on the street right now in the middle of Milford here from our studios, you know, between Route 1 of the Parkway here, and I went down to Route 1 and said, hey, name a beer. Just name a beer. Just name a brand of beer. 90% of those people would say Budweiser. It's got to be at least that high. So when you choose to get, cute, artsy, cutting edge with stuff like this, it's a little weird, isn't it? Like, didn't you think this was going to happen? And again, the comparison I can use on the other side, that's something that would be equally as dumb as Budweiser hooking up with some trans guy or gal, whatever, and to think you're not going to get blowback. The other one that is floats around in my head all the time is, for example, and I think you know what I'm saying here, what if Starbucks suddenly shake things up? What if Starbucks decided to do the same thing, you know, send a promotional Starbucks cup or whatever, much the way Anheuser-Busch did to Dylan Mulvaney, and they said, well, this isn't really for sale. It's just acknowledging our partnership. Could you imagine if Starbucks did the same thing with Ted Nugent? Or with Kid Rock, or somebody akin to that political leaning, you know? Or who would it be? If it was a comedian like Bill Burr or Dave Chappelle, can you imagine that? Oh, the other side would be going nuts as well. So apparently, and this fascinates me, I can't talk enough about this, but I want to ask you, what do you think about this? Did you ever knowingly boycott something because it just ticked you off politically? I know there are people, for example, in various cities and towns around here, around the state, that, for example, when a Chick-fil-A moves into the area, they say, listen, I'm not going to patronize Chick-fil-A, because the family ownership there at one time, I think, was very active in donating to try and not allow gay marriage. Okay, well, I thought about that, and I said, well, I'm for gay marriage, but me not going there is really not going to hurt the family that privately owns Chick-fil-A. It's going to hurt the guys and gals there who are getting paid the hourly wage. Just wanted to kick off with this because, man, I heard this top of the hour, and I'm like, wow, what a cluster. What does the Army say when they don't want to get graphic? Sir, we have a cluster foxtrot. Man, $5 billion Anheuser-Busch got hurt for hooking up with this, if you'll excuse the expression, this transgender influencer. And again, I don't really blame him, her, they, whatever. Seriously, I'm not sure of the pronouns. I don't blame him or her. Somebody waves a check in front of me or him or her. Why not? Of course you take the check. But again, when you do it with something like beer, did anybody not realize in the hallowed halls of Anheuser-Busch, not that I've been there, but I'm guessing the offices, the home office of Anheuser-Busch must be pretty nice. They must have like two Keurig machines in the break room. They must have like really good snacks. Did anybody not realize this is going to blow up? I don't know, man. This is going to be written about in textbooks for years. Gary, hang on. We'll be to you momentarily. Andy in Derby. Andy, how are you, buddy? What's up?
Farluch.
Yeah.
Just looking here, as I've been on hold, 0.5% of adults 18 to 24 identify as transgender in 2023 United States of America.
Mm-hmm.
What marketing genius would target 0.5%?
The only thing I can say, Andy, is this, and that's interesting because you're right. That's the story, and people don't quite get it. But I remember learning, Andy, way back in my marketing classes about establishing a brand preference, right? In other words, you and I are probably drinking the same beer, Andy, if you drink beer or whatever, that we have been for decades, right? And I think what happens is whenever they see a niche market, they say, oh, we got to sweep in there. We got to swoop in there.
If
you know
every
I mean?
One of those 0.5% drank a case a month, they still wouldn't make any money on it.
That's true. And Andy.
Andy. Boycott. I stopped patronizing Nike when they made Colin Kaepernick their ambassador back in 2018.
Yeah.
I'm sure that didn't damage their bottom line.
And
but
in fact, they
just started having this stuff shoved down my throat.
Well, that's the whole thing, Andy. And Andy, thank you, my friend. Appreciate the call. Good to hear from you. Hope you're doing well. Yeah, I mean, that's the whole thing. America, at least part of America, says enough with this. And it's not like transgender folks weren't buying beer before, or were they? Beer marketing is funny, like I just said to Andy, because, and I've kind of mentioned this before, next time you're watching a beer commercial, if you're watching a game tonight, got the Yankees or the Red Sox or the Mets on, or you're watching the NBA playoffs or the NHL playoffs or whatever, or auto racing this weekend or golf or whatever, what do you never see in a beer commercial? Think about that. I'll give you the answer momentarily. I'm going to talk to Gary in New Haven now, but think about it. And this is to my point. What do you never see, never, in a beer commercial? Gary in New Haven. Gary, what's up, sir?
Hey, Paul. Good afternoon.
Hey.
How's it going today?
Good, my friend. Good. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. So I think your last caller kind of hit on the point a little bit, too. I think what a lot of people are getting tired of is, you know, this whole, you know, everybody's special agenda getting rammed down everybody's throat. So looking at this a little differently, I see it as Budweiser and Anheuser-Busch actually exploiting the LGBT community for their own financial gain. So they're, you know, they're jumping on the next best thing.
Yeah.
And I think the people that truly enjoy the product are just tired of, you know, these agendas just being thrown at us constantly. Everything you look at these today on TV, there's someone's personal agenda behind it.
Yeah, normally, Gary, I agree with you because I said to somebody the other day, Gary, thank you. I agree with you because I remember talking to somebody about this, and I said, wait a minute. Do you think Anheuser-Busch really gives a rat's arse about Dylan Mulvaney? Or, exactly as you said, Gary, do they see this and say, hey, You know, we can use him to increase our profits, Gary. We can look like, oh, we're so inclusive and cha-ching along with it.
Absolutely, because nobody really cares if you.
I know.
Nobody really cares what anybody does. If you want to dress up like a girl, go for it. Have a good time. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Nobody cares what you do on your own personal time. It's just that I think people are getting tired of the agendas, and I think people are just really, truly getting tired of getting hit over the head with this stuff constantly.
Yeah, Gary, you like my counter idea? I think this is great for Anheuser-Busch. So let's have Starbucks do the same thing with Ted Nugent. Yeah. Could you imagine?
Exactly. Throw coffee.
Man, thanks, Gary. I appreciate it. Yeah, Starbucks. Starbucks is excited to announce our new partnership with one of our favorite people who loves our double sweet mocha latte frappuccino, our own favorite, the Motor City Madman, Ted Nugent. Right? Can you imagine? And old Nuge will be sitting there in his mountain retreat, you know, surrounded by all his Gibsons and Fenders there, and he'll have a big frothy frappuccino there, and behind him will be like the 8 different bears he shot and killed last week. Me tell you, when the madman's done going after a bear, I love me some frappuccino. Woo! Could you imagine that? All right, before we go to traffic and weather together, akin to what Gary said, what's the one thing you never see in beer commercials? Old people. Watch your next beer commercial. Everybody is maybe in your average beer commercial. And generally, the rule is the worse the beer, the better the commercials. If take a look at your average beer commercial, it's all young and trendy. They're all on a... They're playing, you know, they're playing cornhole in the backyard. They're at a game. They're sitting on some rooftop bar, half-dressed with, you know, the bulb lighting there, embracing each other. It's all young, 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 because I don't care whether you're transgender, omnigender, gender, no gender. It's about brand loyalty. Time to take a look at what's going on that could affect your life and my lives, our collective lives. By what the fine men and women are doing up at the Connecticut General Assembly is we are about 2-3 weeks away from the end of the session, right around there, late May, early June. And joining us right now to talk about that and some bills that we should still keep an eye on that are not resolved yet, we're joined by the Director of External Affairs for the Yankee Institute for Public Policy, Bryce Chenault, is with us. Hey, Bryce, it's Paul here. Welcome back. How are you?
Hi, Paul. Thank you for having me. It's an honor to be here.
Well, thanks. Appreciate it. So I see you folks have kind of raised, I don't want to say the red flag, but just to send out a release here about, what is it, 5 bills here that you say have not been decided yet fully in the end out of committee or have had a vote in the House or Senate that you think we should be concerned about. One here is Senate Bill, Bryce, I see, 1166, and it's titled An Act Concerning Implementation of the Connecticut School Climate Policy. And all I had to do was read the title, and I said, oh boy, I can't wait. What is this one about?
Yeah, sure. Like with many policies, there's certainly a notable, laudable goal within it. It's trying to address or eliminate bullying, both in person and online, which is certainly a goal and an important part of a learning environment for all children and a responsibility for schools to deal with. But to me, I read the program, it's a lot more like the legislation is a lot more like a jobs program for, say, the teachers union. I came across a report done by American Enterprise Institute research fellow Max Eden, who looked back on these social-emotional learning programs, which is what this is under. And he notes that from November 2019 to April 2021, SEL spending grew by 45% to $765 million, likely to become a billion-dollar education industry if it hasn't already. And that was in testimony before the U.S. Congress.
Mm-hmm.
And also criticism leveled against these kinds of programs from psychologists, a pair of doctors, Karen Ephraim and Jane Robbins, suggest that focusing on academics rather than pop psychology would be a good first step toward cultivating genuine social-emotional health and all the benefits that flow from it. So I think this is largely maybe a distraction from underperformance in classrooms and more of a jobs program than it is to deal with kids truly in need.
Bryce Chenault is the guest from the Yankee Institute. Before we take a break, Bryce, how about this one? Senate Bill 938, and I talked about this at length on the air. This bill, and a lot of people called me in, Bryce, and said, called into me and said, are you serious? I said, oh, yes. This bill would allow striking workers, those workers who decided of their free will to go on strike, to, after a time, collect unemployment benefits, right?
Yeah, correct. And Andy Markowski with the National Federation of Independent Businesses, I think, made a really good point in his testimony on this, in that it really undercuts the purpose of unemployment, and it takes away benefits from those who are unemployed through no fault of their own. I'm sure you know someone that's had to go through an unemployment because their, you know, job collapsed, their company that they were working for fell under, they were unemployed during the pandemic, what have you. Mm-hmm. And those are who those targeted benefits should be to, so we can help, you know, catch them and send them back into the workforce. The idea that you'd mandate employers pay, you know, this unemployment insurance fee, which will undoubtedly be passed on to consumers, so that workers who decide to strike for any number of reasons could also collect unemployment checks, it just... it's a lose-lose situation.
And Bryce, some of the people who support this in the General Assembly, particularly on the Labor Committee, they have come out and said, well, yeah, we're siding with the workers here. What's wrong with that? I mean, they admit it, right?
Sure. And there are extensive benefits to workers and protections here in Connecticut, both at the federal, state, and local level. I would certainly want anybody who has a very real grievance with their employer to deal with that. If people want to take voluntary collective action, I'm certainly not going to stop them from doing so in the private sector, most importantly. But the idea that you would compel businesses to pay for who already are compensating people at work, it seems like that gets omitted all of the time, and who are about to have an increase in minimum wage payments here in June. For anybody that isn't making more than that already, I see no need for this, and it's an added burden that can only harm economic development here in Connecticut.
Bryce Chenault is the Director of External Affairs for the Yankee Institute for Public Policy, and he joins us to finish up a chat here on some of the bills that we should be aware of that still may get some action in the General Assembly, may go to a floor vote or not in the State House or State Senate. Bryce, a couple of bills here you put on your list of five, numbers 3 and 4, that have to do with something that I've been following like crazy here, especially in Fairfield County, because we are a couple of housing bills here. And Bryce, the forces here that really want to turn the screws on local municipalities on zoning here are not backing down, especially with these bills.
Yeah, and I suppose I should mention, if anybody wanted to be able to look at the bills that we've talked about here and some others that Yankee has been following, you can go to yankeeinstitute.org and /take-action, or just visit our Take Action page from our homepage. And it's got a whole bunch of bills there, along with a bill tracker with, you know, our comments on them. But to jump back to your question, the one that I think is a particular note on that list that we had included was House Bill 6633. And I think it's really notable because of the effect that it'll have on local spending and property taxes. I've been speaking with a number of local government officials, and our best guess on this is if you were to implement this, you're looking at property tax increases for the household of around $2,000. The reason for that being is because of costs to state and local governments over the next decade of somewhere in the ballpark to $30 to $60 billion, depending on how you what percentage of affordable housing units are going to have to be built, at what cost, at what level of financing by local governments. And it's definitely trying to reshape a number of communities. And I mean, I come from a perspective where I'd love it for more housing to be built and for those units to be affordable for people. But I think this approach is just going to add a whole lot of constraint. It's going to try to redesign cities in a way that from, you know, Hartford, and that I don't think is going to work and be effective of its stated goal and intent.
Yeah. And, you know, Bryce, even though some of these bills, as I found in my research, may be very well-intentioned, there is just a perception by some people. And look, let's face what I've said on this show. The crosshairs here are strictly on Fairfield County, but you could say this would affect the affluent areas around Hartford, east of New Haven, out onto the shoreline. So although people have say these bills have laudable goals, just the feeling of Hartford and the General Assembly saying, well, this is what we want you to do now, and if you don't, we will withhold state funding, that kind of rubs people the wrong way, I would think.
Yeah, definitely. And that came out in very vividly in House Bill 6890. Now, when we sent out our email on the bad bills, we're reviewing that. That bill's gone under a lot of different modifications. Mm-hmm. But when this was going through committee, there was going to be a new position, a coordinator in a new and expanded Office of Responsible Growth under OPM. And the coordinator was going to have immense capacity to determine like what a reasonable distance is from a qualifying bus transit committee. And the amount of authority just bestowed upon this person to reshape almost every town in Connecticut. I think if you were to read it reasonably from the legislation, it's probably like 162 out of the 169 municipalities, something like that, would qualify for this.
Final bill House Bill 6929. This is fascinating, Bryce, because it's something that about half the people say is the greatest thing since sliced bread, and about the other half of the people saying no, this in fact is the worst thing since the aforementioned sliced bread. An act concerning the film and digital media production tax credits, and this thing has been debated for years, has it not?
It has been. And maybe as a way of background, just to demonstrate how much of a fan I am of film and movies, I actually helped make a documentary in the past, and I did it without film and tax credits. You can look up Do It for Dozer or dipfordozer.com. Though you might want to clean that spot because it's a touching story from my hometown in Wisconsin. But the report or the what's very obvious to me is even leadership in Connecticut state government, including the just previously commissioner of Department of Economic and Community Development, cited that this tax credit, which gives money to, well, if you spend some time up at the legislative office building, they call it the Hallmark Channel subsidy. But it led to an annual decrease in state revenue of over $58 million and a cumulative loss of over $500 million since its inception in 2006.
Wow.
And according to all of the academic literature on this, there just isn't the benefit. So the idea is you're going to have more films shown here, which will lead to economic growth. The people working on the films will spend in local communities, all the rest. But according to Michael Tom at the University of Southern California, on average, the only benefits were short-term wage gains, mostly to people who already work in the industry. Mm-hmm. Job growth was almost non-existent. Market share and industry output didn't budge. So in other words, you're subsidizing the salaries of people that are making Hallmark movies. So I don't think that's a great use of taxpayer dollars. And I don't think the claims of the proponents from it don't hold water.
As a documentarian, Bryce, what do you have against the Hallmark Channel? I'm kidding.
Right.
But don't you love it? But Bryce, don't you love it like every June or July, right, when it's 100 degrees outside? Hey, the Hallmark Channel is filming 8 Christmas movies in Connecticut.
Yeah, and I hope for their continued success, and I just think that they should be able to do it without the Connecticut taxpayers subsidizing it.
Bryce Chenault joins us from the Yankee Institute, yankeeinstitute.org. And Bryce, once again, what was the name of that documentary that folks can watch?
Yeah, it's called Do It for Dozer. It's about a story of a high school classmate of mine who passed away in a motorcycle accident. His name is Dustin Zulsdorf. We called him Dozer. He was a great football player, a great friend, and it's quite the story.
And that is D as in David, O-Z-E-R or S-E-R?
That is correct. Yeah.
Okay.
And our website, this is a sidebar thing, I guess, but the Dip for Dozer, D-I-P-F-O-R-D-O-Z-E-R, is we jump in a frozen lake every February in Wisconsin, which you're welcome to join.
I'll still clear of the lake, but I'll send you something. How's that? All right, Bryce Chenault. Bryce, thanks. Appreciate it. We'll talk down the road. Thank you.
Thanks, Paul.
Okay, bye-bye. So there you go, folks. Some bills there that you got to keep an eye on. Hey, time to check back in with our fine friends at the Barnum Festival. The festival's still revving back up from the couple of years where a lot of stuff had to be scaled back due to the COVID-19 pandemic. And for the first time since 2019, the festival is set to select its royal family. How about that? On the same weekend, we have coronation of King Charles. On Saturday, this coming Sunday, May 7th at Visano's Four Seasons in Stratford. This is happening for the first time since 2019. And to tell us all about it and to talk about what's going on with the Barnum Festival, Nancy McKiernan of Trumbull, who co-chairs the King and Queen festivities. Hi, Nancy. It's Paul at WICC. How are you?
I'm good, Paul. I'm very excited to talk to you today about the festival and the coronation.
Yeah, that's great. So, man, it's, I guess, 4 years. And finally, Nancy, I guess, are we now at full speed, all revved up for the Barnum Festival again?
We certainly are at full speed and ready to go.
So tell us a little bit about the tradition behind this, the King and Queen, who participates, where it is, how folks can get tickets. Give us a rundown on that.
Sure. Okay, so the royal family consists of a king, queen, prince, and princess. We call it the royal court or the royal family. And the royal family, I look at them as if they are ambassadors of the festival. They're there to promote festival awareness. They participate in community events. They're going to be participating in several events with the ringmaster, George Estrada, including a road show where they will go to local convalescent homes, entertain the residents, and then the whole lead up is to the culmination of the Great Street Parade on July 2nd, mm-hmm. Which will kick off on the corner of Capitol and Park Avenue and travel southbound towards Seaside Park. And the royal family will ride on a float in the parade.
All right. So what is coming up then this weekend, May 7th on Sunday at Visano's?
Okay. So we started the process off in February, and the schools, we reached out to the local schools who nominated their top students and to represent each school. And we have 23 students participating. Mm-hmm. And on Sunday after, so they've all been through a judging experience, several judging events. And on Sunday, we will announce the winners. The king, the queen, the prince and princess will be crowned.
Excellent.
At Visano. Yeah, on Sunday.
The website, barnumfestival.com. Check it out, barnumfestival.com. Big crowning of the royal family, the Barnum Festival royal family, this coming Sunday, the 7th, at Visano's Four Seasons in Stratford. 3 to 6 p.m. tickets are $30 with a cash bar. But check it out, barnumfestival.com. And the co-chair of the event, Nancy McKiernan of Trumbull, joins us for a few more minutes. So, Nancy, when the schools in the Bridgeport area, you know, put their entrance in and recommend their entrance and for the king and queen and the prince and princess, what is it like for them? It must be fascinating getting to know some of these young folks.
Oh, it's been we've been so impressed with all of them. But before I get into that, I just wanted to make a quick correction, if
sure.
you don't mind.
Yeah.
It's the website. Is barnumfestival.org.
Oh, okay. I was reading off the sheet here. All right, yeah. Barnumfestival.org. Barnumfestival.org. Okay, you're right. Yes.
I want to be able to find our information.
Yeah.
So when we initially started the process with interviews with each of the nominees.
Yeah.
So they came in and initially met with myself and Maureen Arslow, who is the chair of the event.
Mm-hmm.
And that, from the initial greeting, they went in and met with our judges. So they sat in front of a panel of five judges. And they were interviewed, and everyone involved has just been so impressed with the accomplishments of these nominees, their mm-hmm. confidence, their enthusiasm. We're all very excited to work with them.
You know, oftentimes, Nancy, we hear, you know, sadly about the negative things, the bad things that go on in mm-hmm. Bridgeport and with mm-hmm. the area youth here. So getting to know all these entrants for the king and queen and the prince and princess, I would imagine you folks all came out of it after the screening process kind of with maybe a renewed little vigor for what some young people are going to be when they get older.
Absolutely. It makes me feel hopeful for our future. You know, I've been quite surprised with how impressed I've been. I expected to be impressed, but like I said, even just the enthusiasm of these students is just amazing, and it makes me feel good about our future.
Now, when they were recommended to you or nominated to you, Nancy, by the schools, did the schools approach them? Did they approach the schools? Were any of these nominees kind of sort of a little bit in awe, like, I had no idea I was being nominated for this? What did you hear from them on this?
Okay, so for the most part, well, we approached the school and we asked the schools to nominate two students. So the school selected the students based on criteria that we had given to them. Like I mentioned earlier, they need to be at the top 20% of their class, leadership abilities, extracurricular activities all come into play. So I believe it, for the most part, the schools discussed, I would say the guidance counselors most likely in mm-hmm. most cases, discuss the potential of the festival and the nominations with students that they thought were appropriate to be nominated. So for the most part, I believe that all of them were notified by their school that they were nominated, but there were one or two that were surprised when they got the call from us.
Really?
So that was exciting to be able to deliver the news to them.
Yeah, I can imagine that. And I see here in the info here, yeah, you evaluated them, leadership skills, social yep. interaction, and mm-hmm. as you said, the candidates all had to rank in the top 20% of their class. So I see that here, yep.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
All right, so it's coming up. Let's give people the info again. If they want to go, they can go for the whole process here. It's coming up for the first time since 2019. It is the Royal Family Selection for the Barnum Festival this coming Sunday, the 7th of May at Vazano's in Stratford, 3 to 6 p.m. Tickets are mm-hmm. $30 cash bar, barnumfestival.org, barnumfestival.org. And Nancy, why should people come out and go to this thing? What will they see when they get there?
Well, I hate to tell you, we've sold out.
Oh, really?
We've had such a great response.
Well, that's great.
Yeah, but the good news is there's a lot of events coming up that are available on the website for people to take advantage of. There's a Ringmaster's Ball coming up on May 20th, which will be at Sacred Heart University. There's a car show, a two-night car show and food truck festival on June 2nd and 3rd at the old Stevenson Lumber site in Monroe. There's the Barnum Sails of Sound, which is a ferry boat trip out into the Sound, and there's a great band that will play. I've done that in the past. I really enjoy that event myself. Of course, the Wingding. The fireworks on June 30th and the parade coming up on July 2nd. So there's a lot of events coming up. So don't be disappointed about missing this one. Even though it is a great event, there's a lot of things coming up that people can take advantage of.
All right. And I assume the winner of the winner information, Nancy, is going to be on the website as soon as the selection is made?
You know, that's a good idea. We'll make sure that gets posted there. And we would love to follow up with you after the event and announce the winners on WICC.
Sure.
If you're interested in
Absolutely. Okay. We will definitely have you on. Nancy, thank you. Nancy McKiernan, one of the co-chairs of the King and Queen festivities. Folks, the event is sold out. So if you have tickets, you're in for a treat. If not, go to barnumfestival.org. Find out about everything else coming up in the festival as it's all ramped up again post-pandemic, but we're talking about the selection of the King and the Queen and the Prince and the Princess this coming Sunday at Fasano's in Stratford. Nancy, thank you, and yeah, I'll be in touch with the proper people, and we'll have you folks on next week to talk about the winners.
Oh, that would be great. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Nancy. Appreciate that. All right, folks, so there you go. A sold-out event once again. Coming up this Sunday, the 7th at Fasano's in Stratford. So we will find out who the King and the Queen and the Prince and the Princess are from a field of 23 students nominated from 14 Greater Bridgeport High Schools for a tradition dating back to the origins of the Barnum Festival, as the festival finally says get out of here to the COVID-19 pandemic. And every Thursday afternoon right around this time, mark it down on your calendars, 5:07 or so, we kick off the 5 o'clock hour, final hour of the program in the Thursday edition from onlyinbridgeport.com. Check it out if you haven't, onlyinbridgeport.com. Blogger, CEO, Chief Financial Officer, Executive VP of the whole thing, Lenny Grimaldi joins us. Lenny, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm great. Hey, Uncle Paulie, what's going on?
Uncle Paulie, man, I haven't been called that in years. Yeah, there you go.
That's something new. Yeah, you know, going into the news, I heard you make a statement about potential five-car pileup for the 2024 election. I think it's going to be the wreck of the Federal Express.
Yeah, I mean, Lenny, before we get to the Bridgeport stuff, I mean, it's funny, and you've been reading it too, I mean, the vitriol that's getting tossed at our old buddy Joe Lieberman here for being behind this no labels thing. I mean, oh my God, a lot of people, Lenny, are not happy with this.
Yeah, Ron published a couple of Lieberman's commentaries about this, and I love it. And I love the different kind of choice. Yeah, it could be chaos, but I love chaos in politics. So
it's the absolute best, absolutely. Yeah. Lenny, if we could ask you to move around a little bit because you are breaking up just a little. So adjust yourself while I ask you to tip us off here on what's going on. I guess there's a hearing tonight, Lenny, you told me, a public hearing about the general fund budget for the city. So what's up with that?
Yeah, how's this voice level right now? Any better?
Apparently the Russians have stopped interfering with you, so you sound better. Yes.
Okay. Yes. So within the next hour after 6 o'clock, the City Council's Budget and Appropriations Committee is conducting a public hearing on Mayor Joe Gannon's proposed spending plan for the budget year starting July 1. Election year, no tax increase. So we'll see who shows up. Last week there was a public hearing on the Board of Education. So this is the general fund side of the rest of the budget.
Yeah.
And I don't see the council doing major changes to GAM's budget proposal. You know, they're very stuck. And how many kinds of changes they can make? Because so many costs are fixed, right? But they may end up giving the school board maybe a little extra money. We'll see what shakes out. So they're going to have a public hearing tonight, and probably by the weekend or early next week, the budget committee will vote on the budget. And that's where most of the work is done with the budget committee. And then it goes to the full council for ratification.
Lenny, as you can read it, what is the overall financial health of Bridgeport? What is the accepted norm here as you talk to people? How's the city doing money-wise?
If you go by Wall Street, they say it's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
It's improved. The city's credit rating has been increased by Wall Street, so that's good news. And one of the reasons is because the fund balance is strong. I think the fund balance, you know, the so-called rainy day fund is somewhere around $60 or $70 million, and Wall Street likes it to be like 9 or 10% of your overall budget. I think this budget is coming in at $625 million.
Mm-hmm.
So it's reached that threshold that they like down there, and it helps because if you get credit increases, it saves the city money.
All right. Understand, Lenny Grimaldi, that bids have gone out now for the new Congress Street Bridge. What's the anticipated cost on that?
$24 million, most of it coming from state and federal dollars. This is the key artery that connects downtown with the east side.
Mm-hmm.
And it's 25 years ago, it was frozen, right, in a stuck open position.
Jeez.
And it was out of shape, right? It was just couldn't navigate it. And nothing was done on it. And a number of years ago, Congressman Jim Hines did manage to get the money to remove that portion of the bridge that was stuck open. But now there's $24 million that's available to the city. And this is going to be, you know, good news for the east side and downtown, just not for commerce, but for public safety aspects as well, because the Bridgeport Fire Department sits at the foot of that bridge.
Oh, yeah.
And when there's you know, fire issues on the east side, they've got to find another route to get over to the east side, where this would be a direct route. So the bids are going to come back within a couple of weeks, and probably by mid-late summer, it looks like it's on schedule to start construction. And that will be good. It's been a long time. It's been a political football. You know, every year, you know, election year, whether it's a federal race between, you know, whoever's congressperson and that person being challenged, there's always press conferences over there. You know, but when is this ever going to get done? right? It's always been the poster child for infrastructure woes. And, you know, they all call it Bridgeport for nothing, right? So it took an actually took an act of Congress to get the money for the Congress Street Bridge.
Literally. That's great. I love that. I love that.
And this is going to be a fixed structure. It's not going to be, the old one was a drawbridge.
Oh, good.
And fixed structure, the cost factor is not as much on that situation.
All right. Lenny Grimaldi is the guest here, only at Bridgeport.com, our weekly check-in with him. Lenny, I guess John Gomes' mayoral campaign going to be in action this weekend. What's up with that?
Yeah, it's the time that, you know, the opponents have to gear up. They're only about a couple of months away from the endorsement, and Joe Ganim is the odds-on favorite to be endorsed again. So the Gomes campaign, and he's got a number of workers, seasoned campaigners. They're going to hit the streets, do some canvassing, knock on doors, you know, spread the John Gomes name in the neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. But also it's an opportunity for the operatives to start building an infrastructure for securing the signatures that are going to be required to get him on the ballot in July. So after there's an endorsement, presumably Ganim's going to be endorsed. He's automatically on the ballot. Then opponents who want to wage a Democratic primary in Bridgeport have to go out and secure more than 2,000 verified signatures of Democratic electors to qualify for a September primary. So it's a very labor-intensive process. Mm-hmm. It's not one of those things you could just show up in July and just run out there and get signatures. You need an army of people to get out there. And this is kind of the start of that process, because once the endorsement is over, there's only about a two-week window to go out and secure those signatures of more than 2,000.
Interesting. Lenny, finally, one of the things you have here I find interesting, because I always talk about that here in the show, and we love when developers in and about cities like Bridgeport, Hartford, and New Haven, you know, put their money where their mouths are and really make nice, great apartment or condo complexes here. I guess there's one coming up here in Black Rock. But again, Lenny, one of the conundrums here is these are beautiful places, but the prices aren't exactly cheap. And sometimes, as beautiful as these places can be, they tend to cater to a little bit of an upscale clientele. I guess these are going to be the Canfield Park Apartments.
Man, I'll tell you, this place is the berries. I mean, it is just loaded with amenities.
Yeah.
To your point, you're talking market rate, upscale housing. You have to have both in a city. You just can't have affordable, because you have to have market rate, luxurious kinds of housing to, you know, support the businesses.
Sure.
And the restaurants. And that's really a key thing. So, yeah, it's not for everybody, but these units start at about 1900, and they go up to, you know, about 2900 mm-hmm. a month or 3000. But I got to tell you, you're just looking at all the amenities at this place. It's extraordinary. I haven't seen anything like it. And they have a golf simulator. So if you have a golf simulator, geez, I'll just move in.
That's it. Oh, that's all you need, right? All right. Folks,
yeah,
check it out.
They got a movie theater.
Really?
They got a fitness center.
Nice.
All kinds of stuff.
Nice. All right. Check that story out and more only in Bridgeport.com. Lenny Grimaldi with us. Lenny, thank you. Once again, have a great week, and we'll check in next Thursday.
See you next week. Thanks.
Thank you, sir. Lenny Grimaldi right there.